Good Wednesday afternoon and welcome into Grant and Danny. You are listening live to The Fan. A shorty today. We've only got an hour in the wake of Nationals baseball. So we'll take you up to 6:30 this evening. We'll be back to full strength for 4.5 hours from 2 to 6:30 tomorrow. The Nats are about to fly home and get back to D.C. to take on the Philadelphia Phillies to kick off a homestand. But we've got a nice little opportunity here to get to the Rude Guest Hotline.
Right off the bat.
Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV, to make what is a pretty significant announcement for the show. Nationals All-Star pitcher Mackenzie Gore is with us right now, and he will be with us every Wednesday when he's not starting. When he's starting on a Wednesday, we'll have to move the interview around. But weekly for the remainder of the season, we're fired up about this. We have known and gotten to know Mackenzie well over the last few seasons. He's always enjoyable to catch up with and very candid and has great insight. So, Mackenzie, first of all, thank you for jumping on right after the game from the clubhouse in Kansas City. We appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate you having me.
Absolutely, man. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, dude.
We're excited to do this for the remainder of the season. What a win for you guys. It was one of those where you get off to the 5-0 start early and then have to play keep away, and then it took the dramatic big hit from Dalen Lyle. What's it like in the clubhouse after a getaway day win like this where you guys battle to the final minute?
Yeah, it's great. You know, getaway day wins they're always the best. But, you know, it was a gutsy win, like you said, big hit by Dalen, and just a really good way to kind of end the road trip and get some momentum going into a series this weekend.
Is travel, and you guys are such pros, you go through the ups and downs, and, you know, we as fans experience everything, but you guys are again, part of the reason why you make it to the major leagues is your makeup, where you know it's water off a duck's back when things are bad, and you know you're even keel when it's good. Is it really more fun to travel after a win like this?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. Winning is a lot more fun than losing, so 100%.
When you get on the plane on a day like today, like I'm sure there's clicks and everyone kind of does their own thing, but is it cards or music or people just kind of locked into their iPads? Like, what's going on for those of us that have never been on one of those team charter flights? What's that like?
No, we got a good group here. So there's a lot of, it could be cards. There's always music being played. But we're always kind of chatting and hanging out. So we got a good group. And so the flights are always fun, and kind of whatever had happened in that game before is over with once you get on the airplane. And, but yeah, flights are great. It's, you know, it's one of the things you look forward to when a season starts, is you get to kind of hang out on flights again. So,
Mackenzie, how are you feeling just at this stage? Again, I think we underrate it sometimes. It's such a grind what you guys go through. You're showing up in February and getting ready for this long season. It feels like you've been probably doing it on this treadmill for, you know, 100 years as you get into the dog days of July and August and, you know, almost to September. Just how's the body feeling? How's everything feeling stuff wise?
Yeah, I feel good. Once you get this point of the year, you know, it's kind of all about how you feel, and everybody, obviously you don't feel as good in August as you did at the beginning of the year, but that's kind of everybody. And but I feel great, and I've been taking the ball every 5 days, so, you know, credit to people around me for that. And then, you know, but yeah, the body's all feels great, and I'm ready to go again Friday.
Nats all-star lefty Mackenzie Gore will be on the bump against the Phillies on Friday at home at Nationals Park, and he has pitched 24 times as a durable, you know, reliable arm, as he said, taking the ball every single time out, coming off one of his more dominant starts of the season. He got back on the good foot. 3 hits, scoreless, 10 strikeouts in San Francisco, 6 innings, walked just 1. What went so right for you in that start? And I got to tell you, I loved your comments after the A's game, not just about yourself, but the team in general and kind of the way things were trending as a pitching staff. It was a moment where you really showed up as a leader and said, hey, this isn't good enough. We got to get this right. And then, lo and behold, you go out there and you walk the walk. What did you think kind of going into that game about the importance of it, and how did it feel coming out of it?
Well, you know, I was in that little stretch where you're not playing well. You go in, try to make adjustments to kind of just get back to where you need to be. I meant what I said. That was a tough 4 or 5 days for us. And unfortunately in this game, you're going to have a tough week or so, or a couple weeks, no matter who you are. And, but you got to understand that it doesn't take a whole lot to get back where you need to be. And that's kind of what we had to do. And, but, you know, San Fran is over. So now we're getting ready for Philly, a really good team. But yeah, it was just, we had to get back to doing what we're supposed to do. And we did a nice job of that.
I'm curious. Did you hear, McKenzie, from anybody, like players or people in the org, that liked the comments and kind of said, hey, I'm glad you did that? Because sometimes it takes a leader or someone stepping up and saying something along the lines of what you did, which is like, this is not acceptable. We're big leaguers. And there aren't that many veterans left in the clubhouse, really, in terms of like guys 30 plus who have won a championships or anything. Did that come up at all, or did you just feel like someone had to do it, or was it just naturally what happened?
Yeah, I think it's just natural. I think there's a lot of guys with opportunity here. A lot of guys first time in the big leagues. But it's just kind of, we all felt it. We still have some guys that have been around for a bit, and we understood that wasn't, no matter what your record is, there's a right way to play the game and a wrong way, and that just wasn't what we should have been doing. And we played much better on this road trip, so credit to those guys, and they've got some opportunity, and they're playing, they're giving it all they got, and so it's been fun to watch those guys.
Yeah, McKenzie Gore with us here on Grant and Danny. You mentioned Philadelphia having a great season, one of the best records in the National League, first place in the East. Is there a little bit extra for a game like that where you can play spoiler and kind of let your competitive juices go as you are such a huge competitor?
Yeah, look, they're really good. It's Philly. We play them a lot. And you better be ready to go or they'll beat you. And you can get ugly quick with them. And so you just got to come in ready to go prepared. And there's always a good crowd when we play them. So it'll be a lot of fun. And they're a really good team, and you get opportunity to play against the best. So
McKenzie's thrown against them, the front runners in the division, twice this year. Two quality starts, including opening day. Six innings,
unbelievable.
One hit, 13 strikeouts, maybe the best start of your career. Going back real quick, you mentioned the rut before. I have not gotten a chance to talk to you about this. Was there any possibility, do you think, in that A's game that you were tipping anything? Was that something you guys looked into? When someone like you, as dominant as you are, has an outing like that, it's always the first thing I think about, and maybe it's just a lazy take, but did you look into that or try to figure that out, or did you just move on?
Well, you have to look at it, especially when, it's 3 out of 4, we were getting on some runs, and, we hadn't been doing that all year, and there's a lot of balls over the heart of the plate, and there was no swing and miss, so that's always a box you have to check when you give up runs. We didn't find anything, and there wasn't a crazy adjustment we needed to make other than a few things mechanically and, try not to throw the ball down the middle as much. But that's always a box you have to check. But that's even when you pitch well, you got to look at that because teams are so good at finding it second or anything now that it's something you got to stay on top of every start.
I was going to say, I just think that's something a lot of times fans don't talk about or think about, rather, is maybe the better way to put it. But I remember talking to a hitter in the big leagues earlier this year about this. And they're like, it's all we do. Like, all we're doing is trying to find a little bit of a tell. And sometimes it's something none of us would notice that a team might pick up on. So it just feels like a bigger part of the game maybe than we acknowledge.
Yeah, I think, and teams that are good at it, that's awesome. They're super prepared going in for whatever they're trying to do. And, you got to respect teams that are really prepared, and that's just part of the preparation these days. As teams have gotten so good at it. And then on the other side, you got to be able to not do that. So,
McKenzie, we mentioned this at the top. We're pumped to have you on every week. And as a regular guest, you are entitled to pick your walk-up song. So when you join us every Wednesday, unless you're pitching, in which case we'll figure it out. Do you have a song in mind, something that you'd want to hear when it's McKenzie Gore time?
Yeah, I'm pretty bad at picking songs and stuff like this. But, I have a walkout I've had for 4 years now, so I guess we could just use that. Crooked Smile by J. Cole is what it is, but I also, if there's something else y'all want to do, that's fine with me too. So.
All right, very good. Well, we will roll with that for now, and if something comes up, maybe we can ask our audience as well. We'll get some of the listeners who are Nats fans to chime in, but I like it. We're fired up, man. It's going to be cool to have you on the show the rest of the way. Thanks for agreeing to do it.
And appreciate you, buddy.
Can't wait till chatting next week.
Yep, I appreciate it. I'll talk to you then.
Have a good trip, man.
Travels. There's McKenzie Gore of the Nationals with us on Grant and Danny. Here on The Fan. So Crooked Smile by J. Cole, the walkout song at Nats Park, is what we'll go with. So
we'll
come back in next segment, Darius, with that, so we get a little sample of what we're going to be working with.
A little sampling.
With McKenzie Gore. All right, we'll get into the more regularly scheduled portion of this program and get you cooking towards 6:30 and overtime on a short Grant and Danny next on The Fan. All right, Mackenzie Gore, I see you. How mad are you that you're not getting to play a rejoin from Shrek, Darius? Normally, Darius really prefers to play like stuff from like Disney songs or something. Like, how mad are you that you're not playing Frozen from Elsa?
I'm not mad at all. This is an awesome song. Yeah. J. Cole's great.
It's a good time.
Just an actual lyricist.
So apparently Strober told Gore, because the reason I even had you do that in advance is because normally what happens with that, we have someone on, we kick off a brand new weekly segment, and it's always how we end that interview where we're like, hey, you need a walk-up song. We got to get you a song to come up to. And like occasionally, best case scenario, they think for a long time. They're like, oh,
okay. And it's so like, it's so hard on the spot.
It is.
It is.
I'm not upset at anybody, but it's like bad radio, and they're just kind of thinking for 10 seconds.
What do you guys think?
The best case scenario is that happens, and then they give you a song. Mm-hmm. The worst case scenario, and this has happened to us multiple times, is like, oh, you guys do whatever you want. I think the last time was like Austin Eckler. And we're like, hey, man, what do you want to come up to? He did like the 10 seconds of thinking, and he's like, whatever you guys want to play. It's like, no, we want to know what you want. So I told Strober, I'm like, tell Mackenzie Gore, like, hey, think about this. They're going to ask you this. And I guess he told, he said to Strober, he's like, oh, I don't know. But luckily, we had something,
yeah.
But he also is in a profession where he has to walk up to a song every 5 days. Mm-hmm. So he just went with the lowest common hanging fruit or whatever.
He's picked a song in the past. Someone asked him before and he picked it.
And he literally said, I'm the worst at picking songs. And then he tells us he's basically stuck with the same walkout song for 4 years. That's how much he doesn't want to pick a song.
Uh-huh.
Is that he, for 4 years running, he's just walked out to the exact same song to pitch. Most guys are changing out their walk-up song every homestand.
Seriously, like socks.
Few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, Bryce Harper had the Sally one, where Sally's going up and Sally's going down. And
move
Sally's just,
Sally
yeah,
up, right. Move
Sally
up,
over there, blah, and put blah, Sally blah, over blah, here.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Then every other song would change, right? But he always had Sally.
Bring Sally. Bring Sally up.
Yeah.
He's
just doing stuff. Like Sally's got to move a lot. But then every other song would change. Jason Wirth was doing the Game of Thrones thing for a while. He's doing Werewolves of London. I mean, everybody had different stuff.
Got some NFL news to tend to today as we shift gears into our regularly scheduled Grant and Danny program. This is a development and unfortunate. Shedeur Sanders was the talk of the league this past weekend for his strong performance for the Cleveland Browns. The idea being maybe he climbs the depth chart. Maybe he starts getting more first-team reps. Maybe he plays earlier, you know, in the next preseason game than he would have had he not gotten the start and played a good half. The Browns have announced that Shedeur Sanders has an injured oblique. Throwing Wednesday morning, suffered an injury. According to the team, he has been held out of joint practices with the Eagles. And it sounds like he's now not going to play on Saturday night. This is the Dylan Cruz injury, by the way. Dylan Cruz, on May 20th, suffered an oblique. He will be back with the Nationals for the first time in a big league game at Nats Park tomorrow night.
Almost 3 months to the day, by the way.
Which, what a lengthy and awfully long recovery that is. Mm-hmm. Now, some of that is they just babied him and took it really, really careful and were overly methodical. And he could have gotten back a lot sooner. Adley Rutschman up 95 with the Orioles. Out after Dylan Cruz with an oblique was back well before. He's been back for an extended period of time. But still, I guess I say that only to say you just don't know with obliques. I don't know enough about how bodies and injuries work. As someone who tries to do my best to never pull fat, but it seems to me like the oblique muscle is a pain in the butt.
It is one of those, you never think about it until there's an issue. So it's like part of the core, and sitting, standing, turning, any kind of movement at any point in time, you're engaging it whether you know or not. And when it doesn't work, you just can't make it go. It's not one of those toughness things. It's not one of those, oh, suck it up and deal with it. No. If it's not right, you can't do anything. And it's exasperating because everywhere else, I'm sure you feel fine. And you're just sitting there waiting for this dumb thing to finally get better. Then you could finally start to ramp up and exercise again. But if you do it too soon, you're back to square one. So, yeah, it is an exasperating rehab process where some of the other stuff, if it's like sprained or broken, it stinks, obviously, but it's like cast, then I put pressure on it, then I start to jog, then I cut, then I sprint, now I'm playing again. It's not like that.
But what a tough timing and bad setback this is for a guy in Shedeur Sanders who, I think you could make the case, had his arrow trending up harder this week than anybody else in the league. If you're doing
given where he started from, yeah.
NFL stock report, for the last 10 days of football, Shedeur Sanders' stock might be climbing faster and more than anybody else. just based on the performance, the discourse, what everybody's been saying. And now you've got this oblique to deal with where you can't participate in the joint practices. You're not going to play this weekend. And now you got to sit. And guess what? Now Dylan Gabriel coming back from hammy, Joe Flacco. Those guys get to play. And if they play well, now you're the guy watching them shine who's on the outside looking in, who's got to deal with the narrative that they're climbing the depth chart. It's just the timing could not have been worse for him. It's a bummer because it seemed like he was about to grow in his role, at least in the short term, as they sort things out on what is a bad, bad quarterback.
Yeah, there's a lot of names on that depth chart. None of them are scary or good or really someone that could stand in your way. If you demonstrate any competence,
right,
which he did, your stock is going to rise.
If you have a rookie player with rookie money, especially fifth-round money, who shows that he might be able to play, it is malpractice to keep running out Joe Flacco or Kenny Pickett for any real
period of time. For a microsecond, yeah.
So that stinks. All right, let's get to the Commanders next. Short show. We're with you until 6:30 and then Lenovo time after that on The Fan. We're Grant and Danny. If you missed our announcement last hour right after the Nats game ended here on The Fan, we're excited to let everybody know Mackenzie Gore will be with us weekly for the remainder of the Major League Baseball season through the end of September. And those interviews will be presented by Main Street Bank, Cheer Local, Bank Local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. And we thank Main Street Bank and Mackenzie Gore for making this possible to get some more content for Nats fans down the stretch of the season. The diehards, the real ones, want it, and we are delivering it.
We shall provide.
Here on Grant and Danny. So we take you up to 6:30. So there was no access out at the facility today. Quiet day in Ashburn for the Commanders. They've got this weird downtime, Danny, where they don't have a game until Monday night against Cincinnati. That's why Dan Quinn came up with the practice that they put together, which was a burgundy versus gold scrimmage yesterday. Trying to break up the monotony, but also trying to keep them ascending in their intensity and, you know, readiness for the season. And today and tomorrow are days where you get a little rest after what was a pretty intense period, but then tomorrow you're back after it and you start really getting ready for the Bengals. I wonder what we're going to see from starters in that quote-unquote dress rehearsal.
Yeah, I do too. And it's also a product now of a weird hybrid system. And I guess what I mean is, in years past when there were four preseason games, the rhythm of it was you get together in July, you do your two-a-days, you hit a bunch, you get in shape, you get tired of seeing your own team, and now it's time for preseason game number one where you don't do that much. Preseason game number two, you ramp up. Three, you ramp up even more than four, you rest everybody. Well, now there's one less game, so you get this weird calendar where you ramped up, quote-unquote, for preseason game number one with some joint practices, and you don't do anything for almost 2 weeks when it comes to it, right? I mean, it's not exactly 2 weeks, but it's an extended time, so you're trying to, as you said, raise the intensity level and keep the eye line towards playing your best football in week one and then and kind of, you know, continuing to ascend from there. And it feels like there's this long gap between moments of intensity. So, yeah, they're trying to figure out a way to kind of do that. So how teams navigate that, and some have done a very poor job with this new schedule. See, the Bengals, Cincinnati, have not handled this transition very well.
I'm glad you bring them up because they're coming to Landover. They'll play Monday Night Football less than a week away at Northwest Stadium for preseason game number two for Washington. And the Bengals have completely changed the way they're doing things this August. They played their starters probably more, certainly their star players, than any team in the league in the first preseason week. Joe Burrow was like 9 of 10 passing and hooking up with his number one and number two wide receivers constantly in the first preseason game. Chase was going wild. If you're healthy, you're on the field, and they played the majority of a quarter, which was crazy to see. But they said starters are going to play more against Washington in Landover. I wonder if that's going to affect what Dan Quinn does at all. I don't know what his original plan was in the way of week two preseason dress rehearsal action. But if you can get a good look against the Bengals, maybe that makes you more inclined
to play. Maybe that influences things, yeah.
One of the reasons I think that teams don't play starters that much anymore is because neither does the opponent. Why would I ever waste a single rep for my starters against your backups if it doesn't really help me and it's not an exercise that is worthwhile? I'm not going to risk the injury. But if you know the Bengals, a playoff caliber team with Super Bowl aspirations and an MVP caliber quarterback, are going to be on the field for a quarter and a half this coming Monday. Why wouldn't you, especially on defense, where you sat almost all your starters, why wouldn't you give your corners and your safeties, you know, four of starters at those two positions, half of which are new, why wouldn't you give those guys a long, hard look against Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow? I'm curious about.
Yeah, especially with some extra time to before you get ready for week one. Because, again, there aren't two preseason games after this. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's probably something to your theory there. Where, I mean, every team and every coach and every GM will say, we're worried about us. It's up to us. But you also have an eye line, right? You'll understand that, you know, how much value is there. So if I've got a rookie quarterback, for example, I'm going to play my ones more. Because if I'm worried about my rookie quarterback, like if I'm Tennessee, Cam Ward's getting more reps than, say, normally Joe Burrow would for me. I know Cincinnati's got their own sort of baggage, but bear with me. So Pat Mahomes probably doesn't need much preseason action, and the Kansas City Chiefs don't. But if I'm getting my rookie quarterback acclimated, I'm not doing that with second string linemen or third string receivers or a running back that's maybe practice squad bound. The best I got, regardless of what the other team is doing. But this isn't the case here. This is we've got a special opportunity to ramp up. We've already shown that we're willing to go out of the box a little bit and have this, you know, college football style spring game in the middle of August, splitting our teams in half, right, to get ourselves some work. And also, you can adjust on the fly. If you don't like what you're seeing, and it's entirely possible they're not thrilled with where the offense is right now. Again, no book is written, no stats, no rankings. Nothing matters at this point until bad results happen in the regular season. Then we can kind of look back for data points. But maybe you go, you know what, we probably need a little bit more work right now. Let's get it. There's an opportunity there.
The only real action starters are going to get in the preseason is whatever's coming against the Bengals. Because teams treat the third and final preseason game in this new preseason schedule as if it doesn't exist from a starting standpoint. Mm-hmm. It is almost exclusively used for back of the roster decisions. So I have no thought, especially with joint practices leading up to the game with the Ravens, that starters will play at all. If you thought they sat a lot of guys against the Patriots when 30 players didn't play, wait till you get a look at the plans for the Ravens. So it's now or never. It's this Bengals game or it doesn't happen, which is why I bet the vast majority of, almost all of, the 30 guys that didn't play at all in New England will play at home in front of the home crowd in preseason game two. The most interesting name, though, is Jaden Daniels and what they do with him. Because we were told to expect a bubble wrap preseason, basically. There was actually, it was floated, this idea from people that talked to Dan Quinn that we may not see him at all. I think that would be a mistake, especially in a world right now where Terry McLaurin's not out there and Noah Brown has not been healthy and available, so the receiver room is in flux. Guys like Chris Moore and K.J. Osborne, who may not even make the roster, are still getting reps with the first team when Deebo Samuel's in motion opposite Luke McCaffrey and you're trying to figure out what Jalen Lane is. I'd be disappointed if Daniels does not play some against the Bengals. I'd accept a drive, assuming he doesn't go three and out or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, you go out there for 7, 8, 9 plays, and you go on a little bit of a drive, and you kick a field goal, and you get him out. Fine, no harm, no foul. But it's not like you're having joint practices this week. It's not like, you know, the excuse they use against the Patriots might be, he got great work. You hear coaches say that now. We got really good work. Jaden got awesome work against the Patriots. There's no joint practice this week. All the more reason to play him in the game. I think it would be a mistake if he doesn't play against Cincinnati more than a couple of plays. And then we're talking about a preseason where he got the Matt Stafford treatment, where Patrick Mahomes playing in these games. Aaron Rodgers is probably in a new organization with Pittsburgh at 41 years old, going to get some preseason time. I'd be a little bit salty if he doesn't play some at home against Cincy.
So I will put a pin in how much I care, and I know this is probably a cop-out, but if the offense starts slow, if they have one of those games against the Giants that they always seem to have where it's a rock fight and the offense isn't really humming and it's like 16-12 a final and they win or lose because somebody dropped the pass or a field goal kicker botches something or a snap is wrong, then I'll kind of go, really wish we got some more preseason action.
Oh, so you're just going to work back from the result?
Yeah. I mean, if they come out flying, then I'll go, I don't care what the plan was in the preseason.
But what's your, right now, this moment, do you have any care either way? Do you have a preference?
A preference would be for him to play a little bit more. That would be my preference. Simply because...
Well, he didn't play at all last time, so you just mean some.
Well, yeah, more than maybe their original plan might have been.
Got it.
And I guess that's what I mean. Simply because, I mean, these are... I'm not trying to put too much import on what you saw at the inner squad scrimmage the other day, or that, you know, these reports here and there are kind of the anecdotes we've heard from practice. But my only thinking is I got that one game sample, which again was not first team guys. I understand that, but offense didn't look very good. Offense hasn't looked very good. I want the offense to look good. That was supposed. This is the strength of the squad here. That's where the investments are. That's where the first round quarterback is. The first round offensive tackle. It's where Deebo Samuel is. A lot of the big acquisitions here are on that side of the football. Rightfully so, by the way, in this day and age.
It's where you got to harvest your nuts and win football games when you have the number two overall pick at quarterback, who we think might be fringe top five, and the rest of the assets they've dumped into that side of the ball.
And so I would feel a little bit more secure if I saw. I just saw something good happen. Again, I don't need Osaka, Japan. I don't need flea flickers.
How about a drive where they go down and score touchdowns?
This is what I'm saying. Or even if they stall, just something where the football is moving. Yes, please. Thank you. And if I get that, I'll be fine. But so that'd be my preference. But I'm not going to sit there and raise hellfire until we get into the regular season and the offense isn't performing. Then we did this with Rivera a couple times where you were raising the point in real time, and in credit to you, going, hey, they're not. Are we sure? This defense couldn't use any time on the grass at any point in time.
The one that drove me the craziest was the year they quite literally like didn't play. I want to say it was 7 or 8 of their defensive starters at all in the preseason.
At any point in time
on defense when they weren't that good on defense the year before, they're like, "Nah, we're good." It's like, wait, on what planet is this group above putting in the work? I think it was like Sweat and maybe Young and Allen and Payne. Like none of those guys played. And a lot of the starters had a total of, it was like a one series, like 9-snap thing. And that was it. I think that might have even been when it was still 4 games. I don't remember. But I understand the thinking from teams where if you get joint practices and you can dictate game scenarios and sequences, that it's more helpful and it takes away the amount of time on the grass in games. I understand that. But it's still a benefit to play in these exhibition games if you haven't arrived yet. And when you don't, it gives off the thinking that you feel like you're good, that you don't need it. Here's my greatest fear, though. If you don't play starters extensively, and specifically Jaden Daniels, let's say. Let's say they do play a bunch of the starters, but they don't play Jaden Daniels. Maybe it's one drive and he's out. And now it's Josh Johnson in the first quarter or Sam Hartman working with the rest of the starters. And the Bengals are playing Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and their ones for a quarter and a half. And you have another game that looks like the New England game. I promise I don't care about that result. But you will then have had 2 preseason games where you got handled and where there's just not a lot of positive momentum coming out of it in any way, where the other team, because they took it more seriously than you, the Patriots unequivocally did, and the Bengals in this hypothetical will clearly have as well. How is that getting you more ready? Like at some point, I'm not saying that the results matter, but not caring as much as the other team and getting manhandled by the other team, if that were to happen, because they play almost a half and you play a series or whatever, so it's their ones beating up on your twos. I just don't get how that gets you closer to being able to come out and light up the Giants in week 1. There's only 2 things you can do. You can either take everything very seriously and put in all the work and get ready to go blow out the Giants week 1, or you could take it less seriously than everyone you're dealing with. And if they don't play much against the Bengals, that will have been what they've chosen to do. Going into what I'd presume is the final week of the preseason, hopefully with Terry McLaurin coming back, but God knows at this point. Couple of joint practices where you get some good work in, but you're definitely not playing in that game.
All those years where Brady wouldn't play in the preseason, however New England wanted to handle it, if you were going to beat him, it was going to be the first few weeks of the year in September. They've got bigger fish to fry.
Yeah, and they, by the way, lost a lot of those early seats. How many times before the weather got cold and we were trick-or-treating were the Patriots like 1-2 or 2-1, but it was ugly?
They're like, our season starts in October. Come see us then. And you put in that many data deposits, I give you the benefit of the doubt. Now, they wouldn't in New England. All the fans up there are like, oh, the game's passed them by on their way to like another AFC title game or Super Bowl or whatever. So, I don't know. My fear is, okay, fine, we're going to commit. Let's play the starters. And you still don't do anything. And you look similar to like you looked in the inter-squad scrimmage the other day. And the offense still can't move the ball. And everything still doesn't look very good. And the thing that was supposed to be the fix to say, see, relax, is not relaxing. It's actually panic-inducing. And now all of a sudden, do we have an issue? Is the offense not good? That, to me, is my biggest fear, right? Where the assumption is if the starters play, a bunch of good things will happen and we can put any kind of concern to bed. My biggest fear is that. I'm not predicting that, by the way. I'm just simply saying if we're listing fears, that would be mine. I'd write it down on the back of a napkin. But, I mean, it's not a guaranteed fix specifically. We're just out here starving for samples. Like, if we could go and watch every rep in the bubble or every practice and everything, or Cliff Kingsbury could sit us both down and go, listen, guys, I've got 77 different looks for Deebo Samuel that I'm not going to show at any point in time, and we're going to kick the Giants' ass. Here's how. Maybe I'd feel a little bit better about things.
Which I bet the reality is closer to that.
Right.
But I think the Giants are going to be a tougher week one opponent than everyone is letting on.
This is my point. I'm making this point.
Well, I was just talking to AMAC, who's one of our producers here in the building, who was hanging out in the studio a few minutes ago, who's actually a Giants fan. And I was like, I don't think they're going to be a 500 team. I don't think they're going to win 9 or 10 games or anything like that. But I believe they're better than everybody else seems to be pretending.
Their defense, I think 7, yeah.
Their defense is going to be one of the 5 or 7 best defenses that you play all season. I personally think they'll be a top 10 defense in the NFL. And their defensive front might be the best D-line that you're going to face all year. They're that good up front. I mean, the draft pick they made in the top 5 with Abdul Carter made what is a really good defensive line, I think, maybe the best in football. And you get them right off the bat to start the season. If you don't show up and go out and play a good football game in the division against the Giants, you're going to need a hero play or two late from Jaden Daniels to win. And that's why I'm going to pick them. I think against a bad opponent, you're going to make a couple more plays down the stretch. But what I was hoping when the schedule came out would be some style points victory. You're favored by 6.5 or something at home. You win 31-17, 31-14 or something. I actually think that's going to be a closer game, maybe.
Even when the Giants have not been good, they still play these horrendous, awful NFC East, almost AFC North, early 2000s rock fight type games with Washington.
In fairness, when Washington also has never been this good.
Well,
those were like much worse Commanders, Redskins, Z teams.
I got 2 games last year that was, what was it, 23-20 and 27-22, and nobody could pull away and nobody looked good in those games. Like, those weren't the samples you were sending to have, you know, John Facenda narrate for NFL Films, you know, for the year in review. They don't play them well. And the Giants, historically, whether one team's good, one team's not, whoever's been favored, it just, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's a system thing, a scheme thing, a design thing, a uniform thing, I have no clue, but they're in these games against Washington. Washington was way better than the 3-14 Giants this past year, and they barely got away with a couple different Ws against them over last season. 21-18, I think, was the first one, and then 27-20 or 27-22 or something like that. Again, everyone's looking past it. They're a bad team. I think they'll win 6 or 7 games, but they're not pushovers. They're not just absolute disasters like the Browns might be.
Our training camp coverage on the Fans presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation, paulhenryswindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. We're at a point now, as we close in on the end of the preseason too, with this Terry McLaurin thing still lingering, where it's starting to pick up more and more steam nationally, and I can tell that it's crossing over into more of the like local newsy type stuff. I got texts from my father today, and I ended up talking to him on the phone about it, where he's now just officially not huge into the sports or the Commanders, like wouldn't be able to rip off names on the starting lineup or whatever. But he's like, what is going on with McLaurin? Like, he was supposed to be this great guy. And I'm like explaining what's going on. And he's like, he signed a contract. He needs to show up.
Yes.
Like, he called me, and then I got a text from my uncle, who's like, not even from the area. He's a Steelers fan. And he texted me and is like, are they going to get this McLaurin deal done? Where he's probably watching McAfee or some show talking about it. But you could tell it's starting to grow some legs. We had the Dalvin Cook contract today that feels promising just because one of the several players who's been at odds over a contract with his team, this is the first domino to fall. I said Dalvin, it's James Cook.
James.
With the Buffalo Bills. Went full Rouye on you, my apologies.
Mm-hmm. Never want to go full Rouye.
Not full Rouye, not in this regard.
You don't want that?
But James Cook got paid $12 million a year, guaranteed $30 million at the running back position, one of the highest guarantees over the last several years. And so I'm not saying it's the same, and certainly not an indicator that the McLaurin thing's going to end imminently, but the fact that a contract got done and the calendar says August 13th makes you feel like we're closing in on the end of this game of chicken, one way or the other.
You would think. Now, again, my fear, we're talking about fears this segment, it seems a lot, is that the agent and McLaurin are so entrenched that you can't just sign something. Even if they acknowledge that the team is right, and I don't know how this would play out in terms of numbers specifically, but because they've done this big show, you can't just take a reasonable deal. You have to show a win. The agent needs to show a win. I've got to get more than somebody, and more than Metcalf. We're going to get more than this guy, that guy, the comp, just to show that this was all worth it. Otherwise,
it's all ego right now.
Yeah. Otherwise, you did a big tantrum for nothing.
But you
right?
don't feel the same way about the team?
I don't. Like, and
that's interesting.
So, in other words, like,
the team could just cave and give them 33, and you don't think they'd get killed for it, or be bothered that they're getting killed for it?
The team in the because the CBA has all the leverage. They don't have to do anything. They could sit there and hold their breath. We got you this year, and we'll franchise tag you next year. So they've got all the leverage. And my point is, if they just did that, people might be upset about it, but they're under no obligation to do anything because of the way the CBA is. So the reasonable thing. It's not the cool thing. It's not like the kind thing or the treat you great and give you extra money because we love it because you're a swell guy thing that could have solved this potentially. But just the agent won't accept that, I don't think. I don't think the agent and the player will go, yeah, I guess those are the facts, which were the facts in June, which are the facts in January, sure. which have been the facts since you signed the last deal. I think they feel like they have to get a win. And that's my fear anyway.
Well, yes, I just don't think that's specific to this agent or that player. I think that's quite literally how all of these things go. You've got to save face at the end of these. Otherwise, what was the point? It looks like you just threw a gigantic fit for no reason.
Yeah.
That's what Chris Jones' agent, and he did after he held out for a game and they signed a new one-year deal to get more cash that season just to save face. I think you're going to see that for sure with every agent in these situations. But my point is, I don't know why the team, I don't know why you wouldn't feel the same way about the team. If the team just, if he signs a $34 million deal, I'm making this up,
mm-hmm.
in a week, then it's going to look like the team caved. And
totally.
Why on earth would you have possibly gone through all this if
couldn't you have done that before?
Willing to do that. Mm-hmm. So I don't think the team's going to do that, not only because it's a terrible idea and he shouldn't make $34 million a year, obviously, but because they're dug in now too. I'm an Adam Peters guy. Love Adam Peters, love the front office. You don't think that GMs can have egos too? Like they don't think that they can look bad in the media? I think that goes both ways. I think a lot of people are like angry at the agent, and I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, in every regard here, it takes two to tango. So I 1,000% think you're right. McLaurin and the agent will look bad if he signs a deal a lot like what has been reported that the team wants him to, but I think that goes the other way too.
Right. And to me, it's less so simply because the team holds all the cards. If they didn't, if this was really a tug of war and it ended up 50-50 where everybody's a little bit disgruntled, okay. Like,
which is probably how it should end, by the way. Right around 20, I've been saying like 27 to 29, but 28 to 30, whatever. Mm-hmm. If he gets 28.5, 29 million, feels like it's somewhere in the middle. Everyone's both a little bit happy and a little bit angry. That's probably what should happen on a compromise. And that's how you know it worked out.
Right. But that's my feeling is that that won't be good enough. My fear is that won't be good enough for the agent and Terry. And that's the only thing in the back of my mind that's going, you know, hey, the calendar. Hey, it's time to play football. Hey, you're under contract this year. Hey, you're a good dude. Hey, you're part of this team.
Yeah.
You get it. All the good things we've ever said about you. I worry that that little thing is we can't do less than something. Otherwise, this will look stupid or we'll look foolish or we'll look like all we did was throw a temper tantrum for nothing.
But you don't think the team goes, it can't be more than this or we'll look like we just waged war for nothing.
No, I think the team gets to go, yeah, we got you for these numbers already, according to the CBA.
No, but I'm saying if they were to sign at 34 or 33.
If they did that, then yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
so that's what I'm trying to say.
I got you, yeah.
Football Talk on the Fan is coming your way today and every day thanks to Paramount Plus. You can count on much these days, but one of the things you can always count on, Sundays in the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus. All season long, visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Linnell's got overtime coming your way in just a bit. That was a very taxing 70 minutes of radio. I mean, what kind of award should we be given for that? We just worked for 70 minutes,
the
people.
All of the awards award.
Oh, it's a good award.
Mm-hmm. You ever get that?
For Darius, who broke a sweat. Strober, who is just taxed. Poor Strober. He probably had more time on the Metro than we just were on this.
I was about equal in traffic, by the way.
Did you Metro or drive in? Okay, he drove. He's fine then. Everybody's going to be okay. We'll be back at it at 2 o'clock tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Keep it right here on The Fan for Lynn Overtime.
Thank you for coming.